You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
It is me.
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering the anime that aired the week of the 2nd of December 2019 through to the 8th of December, that very same year. And I realised, just as we were recording, that there was something I only watched half an episode of. We shall get to that when we get to it. But let's talk first about something I watched the all 5 minutes of it. That is Super Shiro, Episode 8, The Rope Bridge Rhapsody. In which our hero and our villain are messed about with by a crow.
Is that crow from like a prior thing? Because he's got a very specific design that looks like I should know what it is.
He looks a bit like that that bird who sells the chocolates, but that's probably the closest.
This looks like a bird.
It's just the like entire beakness of his body and the really gangly legs. It reminds me of something, but just on the tip of my thought, basically.
But it toss into question. It's just a third faction trying to get the ball. Just playing both sides.
Well, next week it looks like a massive amount of dogs are after the bird.
Oh no, the secret's out. The snitch crow told everybody.
So this time the bone is just a bit of driftwood in the shape of a bone that may have fallen off the rope bridge that it's under. So the crow overhears Shiro getting the message in his kennel and goes and informs Dekapu, who is constructing a giant robot of some kind.
I don't think he finishes it. Like, he doesn't really employ it. He has a segue.
He does have a segue.
He doesn't have the giant robot ready for this episode.
Which brings the question, do they sell dog-sized segues, or does he make his own dog-sized segue?
He must make his own one.
If they don't, they should, really.
No. You got too caught thinking about whether or not you could. Didn't think about whether you should. And we should.
Yeah, Shiro's riding down the river in, like, one of those wooden wash basins.
I thought he was in a barrel, but that makes more sense based off the scale. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And Dekapu fires basketballs at him. And then we get excellent Aki Atsuko at one point going, baby, 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 baby!
Baby!
Like, the animation wasn't as up to snuff as I've come to kind of expect from this, but the voice acting was top-notch, yeah.
Then Dekapu tries to bungee jump off the bridge to get it, but they shake the bridge, and then Shiro tries it, and he shakes the bridge.
It goes on for a while.
Dekapu lands on the rock where the bone is. Shiro tries to use his beam, but the crow keeps on shaking the bridge. But
I did like that, just him stopping the song and giving a dirty look to the crow. It's like, hey, come on.
I'm a superhero, you can't put me off. Yes. Watch this. Super, super, super.
And he shrinks Dekapu. Dekapu goes flying down the river.
Dekapu was literally eaten by a pike.
Yes.
He's now dead.
They test the bone, and of course, it explodes.
By the way, it's like, oh, I'm just going to test it here. I think it'll be fine this time. Like, and it explodes immediately. It didn't even give you the beat, which is, they're still messing with me there, even though I know that's exactly what's going to happen.
Is it more dogs? I know he seems to be always ants and fleas next week.
Yeah, the hardworking ants, I think, is next week. Okay, he has to employ his fleas to save the bone, save the day.
Yeah, I guess. There's like a mysterious person in a trench coat, but I wonder whether that's a load of ants in a trench coat.
I'm kind of hoping it's that, yeah.
Can I go some kind of that the bone is inside someone's body? You gotta go on a fantastic voyage.
Well, he does have a shrink ray, so technically this is something he could achieve, but alright.
Or it's a spot on his back that he can't reach. He has to dispatch to please to retrieve it for him.
Then we've got Null and Pet at episode 10. I think of my big sister, therefore my sister is, in which the story edges ever closer to my theory that this is some sort of, story about grief.
Yeah, overcoming grief or, like, gaining the tools through fucking bizarre means to overcome it, yeah.
Well, which I kind of hope that then it's going to do a swerve and it's not that, but it's based on a video game and that feels very much like, hey, 2019 video game plot.
Yeah, yeah. I was kind of hoping, based off the end of this, that it was just the sister dressed as a robot this whole time.
Who could, but she was still doing all robot things. How?
It's a weird show, man. It could happen.
Yeah,
it makes sense.
The special weird thing I think here is the favorite visual of the weird things happening in the town are the stop and go.
That was great.
Stick figures climbing out of their sign.
She's walking through town. She's like, "Oh, fucking, there's nobody about. That's weird. There's no one in I think it's like the ice cream or the sweet shop." And she just pays for the thing she takes and then leaves. But like, there's a bunch of weird signs about in town, like a dragon zing kind of fucking thing. And it's like, that's not right.
And then she's like, maybe I've been died and been reincarnated in another world.
Oh, that happens all the time in anime. Yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta watch out for that.
Mm. But he's trying to rationalize it. Oh, no one's around because it's the middle of summer holidays. And,
that's why there's no one at the school. Everyone's off on their holidays, basically, is her excuse.
Yeah.
But there's too many weird things, like you said, the stop and go crossing, people being, walking out of their sign.
Walking bunch of flowers.
Mm. Oh yeah, cause it's like the crossing where her sister died and there was like a bouquet down there and it's kind of like, oh geez, did she put that down when her sister died? And then it just gets up and fucking legs it. It's like, that's not normal. That's not right. And she's trying to like justify it as like, it's probably all fine. It's fine. It's fine. So she goes home and follows her sister's rice recipe because her sister's been at it, making all the what's
disgusting
it?
Rice.
Yeah. Black rice or something.
We're just full of it.
Nasty.
We've got no other kind of food to eat.
So she has to make her own following her sister's recipe, but obviously, I guess actually doing a good job of it because it looked edible in the end.
Yeah. Look at that big. Like a bamboo shoot stuck in it.
That's part of the recipe. It's essential.
it's pretty decadent.
You eat around it. Yeah. Yeah. Goes to bring it to her sister, like again, enforcing this, what philosopher was that? I think therefore I am. I think of my big sister, therefore my big sister is. And because I think of my sister, because I am, it's like a weird sort of external validation rather than internal validation of that statement. She brings it to her sister, and her sister is not in her room, and her robot skin is drying on the washing line. That's weird.
But her reaction is, oh, I guess it comes off.
You built her! How do you not know how she works?
Well, in fairness, she did just throw all the ingredients into a science machine and then spat this out. So if you find her, they've got under the hood and it or anything.
It was very much a Powerpuff Girls type situation. Where
mad science.
Throwing ingredients in and hoping something comes out.
Hmm.
Two more episodes of this, plus the one you can only get if you buy the video game.
I bet you that'll have the actual fucking ending on it. We'll never know.
We'll live on a farm somewhere.
Then, did everyone or anyone watch Blade of the Immortal, or were they too disgusted with last week's episode?
I gave it a shot.
It was Act 9, Gathering.
Yeah, there's a good deal less horrible things going on here. But
I like
more...
the characters acting competently and like, coming up with clever plans and that kind of shit. It was like, okay, this is kind of the development that I've been missing out up to this point where it was just, you know, disgusting gore.
Again, like, you know, Rin's going like, okay, what do I bring to the team? What's my role in the crew here? Well, like, I'm not going to get good at fighting anytime soon anyway. So what can I bring to the table? Oh, I can be the sneaky person who is all about deception.
Yeah, and like Manji's kind of like after uncharacteristically leaving her alone with a maniac the past while, it's kind of like, yeah, you're probably the only person who can sneak past the gate because look at me. I'm very fucking obvious, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so she kind of basically does a runner, pays for the hotel and is like, sorry, I'm leaving you. I'm going to strike it out on my own. And she's like, yeah, this is probably going to go pretty well, but everyone in town's giving her weird looks and is like, why the fuck is everyone giving me weird fucking looks? Oh shit, that's a wanted poster with me and Manji on it.
Damn.
It's not a very good likeness of her, but it does have the kind of dozy face of her that she makes sometimes.
It has
the haircut,
little rings at the end of her braids. It's like, ah, yes. Which she thankfully ties up for purposes of her disguise, because she goes and meets up with this married couple who run a very normal looking cafe, but actually they did moonlight as just people smugglers who get you through the gate. They'd offer themselves up. Oh, this is our cousin Jerry. Yes, that'll do. He's just coming by on a holiday, and we will go through the gate. And because the guy is all known around town, they can't trust him. It's like, oh yeah, this guy's on the level. Is there anybody in his family? It must be on the level as well. And they didn't get through, no problem. No checking the papers or anything like that.
Like Rin was informed by the woman who ran the inn from the last episode. Still not given a name, that character, but she's been remarkably helpful. Yeah, where these guys did smuggle people through before, but as they inform Rin, when she's like, hey, I'm here to pay for you to smuggle me through. And they're like, yeah, we didn't do that anymore because it was this poor girl. She couldn't really afford to get through. But, you know, we wanted to help her out because she was in a shitty situation and they caught us. So we got kind of fucked over, like in a fine kind of way, but they also made us watch them behead her. So we're not doing that anymore. Mm-mm, no way. We're out of the business, man. We're out of it for good.
Yeah, that's what you slaps on a wild poster. I got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
I'm determined. She's already
She's already wanted for murder, so they're probably going to kill her anyway. Her head is already up for the chop, is her excuse.
So they get the plan, okay, and just go, okay, your name is Sawa Yamaguchi. Your parents are Herb and June Yamaguchi. You're from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yeah. So he walks up to the guys and the guards are like, yeah, walk on through, man. And they're just kind of smiling away. And Rin was like, well, that was fucking easy. What are you talking about? It's like, no. It's the magistrate, is the fucking guy. He's on the ball. And he's the kind of guy who's like, you know, kind of like, I'll just ask some very simple questions. Name and occupation kind of thing. Let me just ask you a couple of questions. And he specifically does like the Columbo, just one more thing.
One more thing.
Like he does it twice as well, which is really funny to me. But yeah.
Yeah, just to go into the thing, like he rocks up and is like, hey man, how's it going? Oh yeah, good to see you, pal. How you doing? Who's this? Oh, this is my wife's sister. Yeah. Just coming, passing through on a visit, just seeing some tea houses. Oh yeah. So
Who's minding the hotel? The wife's minding it. It's like, oh, you're leaving her while you're going on holiday. Fucking easy life, huh?
Just kind of like, you got me.
Yeah, it seems like they're very clearly super suspect of this guy in general and of this specific situation. And it's like, because he's like, I know I've done this kind of thing before, but this is totally legitimate this time. If you just give us a pass, sure, after a couple of questions. And even then he's pulling out the files. He's like, I'm just checking the census forms here for your name and occupation, your husband's occupation, and like family history. And he's got it all fucking, he's got all the information he needs in front of him, even if he doesn't know where to see her, that kind of way.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a whole thing. Yes, I passed through here when my family members did. And, and just say they're going around seeing like the tea and things. Oh, yeah, when was that ago? Yes, this guy, she's got all kind of these little sub details figured out about this, these funny little stories or little details about it. And it went to this shop. Oh, yes. And
You went through Watchcaller Town, didn't you? And it's like, no, we couldn't go that way. There was a landslide there, so we had to go around the route that way. And it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that landslide. That's keep the road closed for a few months now. You know, He's pretending as like, hey, I'm going to ask you, did you come from this town? Which would be the way you'd come from. But it's like, you couldn't have come from that way. And I was trying to catch you out. And it's all just light banter conversation, but with the underlying thing of he's very specifically trying to catch him out.
It's just like tiny little details. Really, if you leave or from here, you would know that they don't grow these at that farm, or they don't serve this at that restaurant anymore. It's like,
Rin has the details absolutely down. So he's kind of like, hey, how come, what's his first one more thing? Cause it's like the it's Rin has to work on the emotional.
Oh yeah, it was like, oh yes, you mentioned there about you couldn't get through the day at that time because the road sided past, and you said it was a bit of a deal for yourself and your. Let's check my notes here. Your daughter. May I ask, where is your daughter now? I can see you're not. She's not with you here. And then say fuck. Beating up at that part.
Yeah, your man's constantly freaking out and sweating, and he's like, actually, and he's like, you shut the fuck up.
I don't know how they're ever going to do this, because that guy keeps jumping in. I guess he's nervous that he's going to go off, mess it up again, but he's just got so many tells.
He's got so many tells, but maybe they're used to him just being a sweaty, greasy motherfucker, because they know him in this town, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and then Rin launches into a story about a very harsh winter, like 2 years ago, when
she nearly got swept away in the river, and her parents died saving her. And while she's telling this heartbreaking story, it's like, oh, they only found their bodies 5 days later, that kind of thing. And I was actually doing this thing as like a pilgrimage to honor their memory and stuff. It's showing a flashback of all the shit she's been through, and we've seen in the show to so she can well up that emotion. And I was like, that's really fucking well done. Very nicely. I mean, like, I know it's reusing animation and everything, but I was like, that's very a nice idea to shoot it that way.
Yeah, but it's like the story she's, it's like this telling an equally tragic tale.
But just completely unrelated tragedy. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, the man says, oh, I'm so sorry for dredging up all those bad memories. I'm many apologies.
Your
so
tears
sorry.
Have proven your words true. You may go on your way. Consider yourself passed to travel. Just one more thing.
So you had
two kids, right? And you were, let me just check my census notes here, 14 when that happened. That must have been a difficult birth. And she's like, yeah, it was pretty tough. It's like, so your body would show the signs of that difficult birth. Guards, get me the midwife so we can have a fucking body check on her.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna go into detail, and your man's just like, oh shit, oh fuck, we're fucked. And Rin's like, no need for that, I'll fucking show you here. And she kind of undresses partially, not entirely, just to show the scars of a cesarean section.
Mm.
Which is like, wait a minute.
Did it paint that on?
Yeah, and it was like a thing earlier before this scene where the wife's kind of like, you gotta show me your resolve. And she kind of walks into the bath where Rin's taking a bath with a knife, and you're like, what the fuck? Yeah, they carved a fake cesarean thing into her. Like, not super deep, but deep enough to make it go like that. Looks like the scars. It looks like the scars done on trained eye. Like, if they actually got the midwife in, obviously she'd know the difference. But your man's like, whoa, okay, sorry, my bad.
Yeah. That was he's kind of impressed. This is one tough lady.
Like, even if he's like, okay, you might still be lying to me, but, You got your shit together, so I can't really deny you.
I got a feeling you're lying, but I got nothing on you. You've bested me at every turn.
Exactly.
Whether or not true, I'm still really impressed.
Yeah. It comes across as he's like, you might be lying, but I can't prove it, so you're good.
And this is like something that was like really needed, and I think I've been waiting a bit for. It's like, yes, this is what Rin brings to the team. She can just be the infiltrator. She can be the sneaky one. She can just use her guile, not just her one feminine wile or anything like that. She actually just can play this part. But it's probably because she's just a good actor, I suppose.
Yeah, but it's also her, like, drawing on the shit that she's been through in order to do this. And it has fucking bodily mutilation in it, and it's a very uncomfortable fucking scene, but it kind of shows her resolve and her drive, which is a thing that she's been questioning for, like, the entire show up to this point. Yeah.
Just trying to, how do I express this? Cause I can't really fight. And, I'm just kind of wondering, were we able to carry this through to the end? What can I do with this? What can I achieve right now to help me further my end? And this is something. Yeah. So let's see now. Hopefully there are more opportunities for her to employ these skills in some way, shape or form. Like maybe she can just be like the mastermind behind it. Sting operation or something like that.
Or at the very least, the show will have different ways for her to show her drive to achieve her goal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that took a lot of balls to, like, be able to walk in front of that guy and do that. And also to let someone cut into you to make disguise scars. It's like, yeah, it's clearly, it shows that she has the resolve to follow this through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This isn't one of those kind of things where, man, you can just charge in and save her. I don't know. She's got to sink or swim with this.
Yeah.
Little ploy.
She's in it on her own on this. And she knows what happened the last person who tried.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, if it's, can keep this uptick in quality in story quality anyway, content quality, then yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Pretty good.
Then we've got, once my computer starts behaving itself, we've got Dr. Stone, episode 23, The Wave of Science, in which we get a lot of science done to the point where we have to have a science montage towards the end in order to fit in all the science this episode.
Central heating, vacuum tubes, everything.
And also, he introduces high fives to the stone world.
Yes. Everybody wants one.
Yeah, it didn't go high five invented. It was like, but it's rad as fuck. It's the cool high five where you pass each other out and you don't look at each other afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah, like Chrome and Senku have their little thing where they're like, yeah, we're doing some science shit. And it's like, and Kaseki's got, oh man. I'm just an old dude. I wish I had
a science bro. And Chrome's like, what the fuck are you talking about? You got us, bud. Like, but I'm like an old dude. It's like, so?
Yeah, cool. See all the shit you make and you're super buff. You're awesome.
And we get a flashback.
And I have a high five as well, yeah. Then. You sure can, little guy.
that's later when Gen's trying to convince him to make the...
He's trying to trick him into, like, oh, you couldn't even do this, old man. And it's like, no, I'm good. I will do it for the price of one high five.
And then Suika sees this, and she's like, what can the kids do? And, well, kids, you got to work, carry on making the wire. You got to make it, that's your job. Because basically they're splitting all the jobs so they can get everything done by spring. Because it starts with Senku saying, okay, I'm going to make the tungsten toothpaste.
Yeah, I need to do the chemistry stuff. So, Chrome, I need you to heat it to like past 1,000 degrees, ideally.
Yeah.
But I can't really. I mean, like, I'm not going to talk you through it because you've already learned everything you need to do it.
She's testing Chrome. What's that? You can do this, right? You don't need my help, do you? To show everything you know of it, and
yeah,
literally show everything you know of it. Just bolt one contraption onto another, trying to achieve some kind of mechanism to achieve this goal.
Hmm.
And then they need a Hickman pump built, and that's where Koseki gets his high five. Which, that was a phrase I'd not heard for a long, long time, and then I looked online, and I think they're not called that anymore.
Because he's working on, like, a very old version of stuff, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like, he's not even making, like, the earliest version of the tech. He's running on the super basic one that he, like, yes. I was like, okay, we won't be able to get that one yet, but we will start with a more basic one.
Yeah, it's like they can't make plastic, they're going to make Bakelite instead. Yeah. And
because they're using coal rather than petroleum.
And I still a side effect of that is that, well, we need to, like, burn down coal really quickly. So let's give everybody stoves for all their houses. So that means that they can also do the little jobs as well, like needing this, like braiding this gold wire that we need indoors. So they aren't.
I mean, the way they're all going outdoors to do it, but I'm guessing, like, well, they don't have indoor lighting, so yeah, they have to do it outside. It's very fine work, and it's like all the children, like, my poor frozen orphan hands.
Oh, please,
and the old people, like, oh, it's such a harsh winter. And Senku's like, how can I help them without seeming like I'm nice?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, and that's the chiefs or the former chiefs. All this stuff is just like, you know, you didn't even really intend, or it's not towards our goal of the war effort, but it just happened anyway. For one thing, that's the science, man.
Enriching lives by doing things by not even doing things that you're intended doing, but the knock on result is life enrichment.
Better
quality of life.
So, you know, things can be, it is, well, like, you know, how a lot of things that were developed for, let's say, World War II or after World War II, they were for military applications, but then they went on to improve the lives of civilians, and then offshoots of that again led to development of things like computers and all sorts like that.
Mm. Yeah, I recommend Philip K. Dick's The Zap Gun as a good satire on the idea of the military-industrial complex creating civilian inventions.
I don't think I've read that one.
It's a world where there's still a Cold War, but it's a deliberately managed Cold War because they're maintaining the Cold War in order to continue to get scientific advances.
Okay.
But then introduced into that, unfortunately, is a guy who suddenly decides he wants a war. And then it gets very strange because it's a Philip K. Dick novel.
Sure.
Yeah, it goes into some places you would not be expecting unless you read the back of the cover, in which case you would, because it kind of gives the thing away. but as like a it's not super strange for a Philip K. Dick, so it works quite well as a satire.
Mm.
Yeah, so that bit did remind me of that a little. And yeah, by the end, they have built their cell phone after they get Gen to make 800 manganese batteries.
But he makes a cool song about it. Yeah, rap song. Work better.
yeah, there's lots of Gen wandering backwards and forwards as if to try and avoid work, and then at one point, Kaseki just drags him off to work the pump.
Well, he's the leader now, and the leader makes the rules, and rules are rules.
And they're like, I think those two like get along better than we think.
Mm.
And they all get along, because everyone's pals now. Even Magma.
Yeah,
the chief again comments on that, kind of like, it's like, why is Magma helping? Did anything happen in those caves? It's like, oh, nothing, you need to worry your little head over.
Yeah, which is weirdly being echoed again in the comic with another character you would never think to be friends, and it looks like he's going to be friends.
Yeah.
Takes all folks to make a world, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what Senku's saying, man.
Mm.
And, I think the other thing Senku is always trying to do is figure out, what does somebody want and how can science provide what they want in a way that isn't going to cause other people problems.
And also isn't going to make him like he did it on purpose.
Yeah.
That's also key.
Yes, because, yeah, Senku's, I hope that somehow gets pulled out as a weakness of him at some point down the line of his trying to pretend that he doesn't have feelings all the time.
Trying to pretend that he doesn't care about helping and benefiting people, yeah. When clearly it's like, you very much so care about that shit.
Yeah. I don't think it's happened yet, but, So one more episode in theory of Dr. Stone. I think I know where this series is going to end, but then...
From the intro you get... Like,
yeah, that's why.
Indicator theory.
Yeah, so it kind of gives you away if you know the story. We see the backs of lots of people's heads on Tsukasa's army, though, this episode.
Yeah.
Which, if you've read the comic, you know exactly the backs of whom's heads they all belong to.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're all color-coded as well. Weirdly, I think they'll only need 13 episodes to finish this arc, so I don't know whether it's just going to come back shortly for a one-season outing.
Instead of doing two half-seasons, doing basically three half-seasons.
Yeah, but maybe take a break. Like, I don't know idea whether it'll do that, but that feels like what it could do.
Okay.
Yushio and Tora did that, didn't it?
It did, yeah. Just jumped back in. Was it a year or less than a year later?
Yeah.
Straight back in to where it left off.
Yeah, we shall see.
Yeah, it did end on an arc, I would say. It wouldn't be like a big step in the main arc. I did feel like I was in the middle. Some characters just been really, like, introduced in and then was suddenly wrapping up that bit of it. And then do I come back again a year later?
Then we got Welcome to Demon School, Irumakan, Episode 10, Fierce Battle, Execution Cannonball. This was wonderful because after the last episode setting up the like the heightened tension of Aruma worrying about how he's going to perform in the execution cannonball game is acted as a distraction for making you realize just how bad everybody else would be at the game as well.
Like, here's the one guy who practiced for this. He's in with a better shot then, yeah. I mean, like, he realizes at one point when he catches the ball, oh, I caught the ball! Oh, fuck, how do I throw?
Didn't we'll cover that in day two.
dear.
Because, yeah, by Jove, everybody is very bad at it, except Alice. But except Alice isn't trying... through most
he's
of
paralyzed,
the
he's paralyzed with incision because, oh my god, I played a game, but I'm on the other team to the master. I can't play against a master. He's catching and dodging all things. You know, someone tries to take him out of a dodgeball, zap, not does. It's like, I'm trying to think over here. Smash.
I did like the way the other team, I forget it was, he was team B, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They were kind of like all going like, okay, so let's not try and get Aruma because he's really good at dodging. Okay, let's not do that. And then Sabnock is there. It's like Sabnock's really big. Let's hit him. That kind of thing. Whereas the other team were like, let's not go for Azazel because he's very good at this. You know, their strategies are basically like, let's not fight these guys. Don't even get them in the game. Basically,
Asmodeus, Azazel's Amory.
Sorry. Yeah. Mixing up my demons.
Who does come down to take a look to see what Aruma's ambition is like. Though, yeah, I did like the payoff of her. That feeling in your heart is your ambition. And Aruma's like, are you sure?
Doesn't feel, I mean, I don't know what ambition feels like, but this one, that doesn't sound like that.
Yeah, because the crux of it is at the end is that he manages to win through his own strength and training. And, well, actually also for turning Asmodeus' strength against him.
Using Kung Fu.
Yes. And this is the first time he's ever worked hard for his own benefit. And that makes him incredibly happy. Which then he's told that is your ambition. And he's not convinced that that is what he's feeling. but then again, he is dealing with a demon. So...
they view emotions differently. Yeah.
Doesn't Sabnock just grab the ball and then walk across into the wrong area? Someone does. I can't remember.
It was that little owl dude.
Oh, the little owl dude. That's
oh no, the boss hit that girl.
Yeah, he kind of offered that hot girl. Team.
Hey, here's a ball back. You want to go out sometime? God, you're out of bounds.
Clara just fills the area with loads of balls.
That's a pretty good plan.
Except I'm not sure it was a plan. I think she just I don't think it was a plan. More balls.
But it was also like part of the rules of you can use magic, but only on the ball. That's and I was like, yes. Can you use magic to make balls? And I was like, that's not technically covered, so yes. Yes, you can do that.
On the main ball or on another opposing player. So
you're just making more balls. Yeah, the guy, the sleepy dude, causes like an earthquake and that gets him disqualified.
Yes.
You know, they used it on the field.
Because he's trying to sleep during the game. yeah, and they're all slowly eliminated one by one. And then we get this. Asmodeus basically feels like he's trying to like, oh, I can't throw it because...
I have to throw the match. And then he kind of sees Aruma and is like, oh, shit, he's fucking trying. It would be remiss of me to give it anything but my all.
And then
bursts into flame. He's like, oh, Jesus.
he's the master. Like he'd be able to take anything I can throw at him. I must meet him head on at the maximum spectrum.
And he doesn't even, like, when he loses to Aruma, like, turning his attack against him, he doesn't even feel bad about it. He's like, that's kind of what I expected, really. He's just more impressed with Aruma as he usually is.
And of course, once Amelie has the, he gets him promoted first after he wins.
Finally
treats him with a bit of respect, looks like that will be quickly undone next episode.
Yep.
Yeah. Actually, a good thing as well, because if, they was going to put him stunt or Asmodeus would have thrown a match, I would have expelled him right there, or I never would have given the rank up. But, they seem to be genuine, so I guess I better give them the badge.
And then Sam not asks where his promotion is.
Yeah, everyone else is like, are we getting promoted because we won? It's like, no, he won, so you, none of you get anything. And Sam's like, do I get promotion? It's like, wait, you lost. So I'm wondering if he's ever going to get promoted. That would be really fucking funny.
And then I can't remember the blonde-haired one's name, but he goes and says that Caligo's going to buy everybody drinks. And he comes back.
No, I'm not.
He said he'd buy us all frosty milkshakes. I didn't fucking say that. Nope, not going to happen.
Once again, Asmodeus can't hear the conversation between Aruba and Amory because Clara is just growling and wants to run and scratch her.
Yeah, it's not even that he's too far away or there's a window between him or anything. It's just Clara's too fucking loud. It's great.
And then Aruba comes home and thanks Opera for training him, which makes Opera happy, as we can tell by his cat ears.
Hmm.
And then
Granddad didn't get any credits.
But I want to be thanked. It's like, and he's like, too. Oh shit, I didn't fucking, I just let Opera do it. Shit.
I like the fact that he immediately realised that he hadn't actually done anything to help, and therefore his complaint was totally
he wants to complain, but he can't really. Yeah. I did also like it earlier in the episode where Opera's about to serve him tea, but Opera keeps drinking his tea. It's like, that's my tea. Oh, fuck, he's drinking it. No. Damn it. Missed out.
And then post-credits is that after we see the invite to the drinks is Amory puts on the non-detection glasses so she won't outshine Aruba.
Just whacks him on and walks away. I was never here. But they don't work if everybody's already seen you.
Yeah, so. They don't work if you put them on after they've seen you.
Nice shade she's got there. It's an interesting style for her, but she can pull it off.
Yeah, looks like Clara's got her glasses back on next episode. Where we've got Together with Familiars and the Battler's Challenge. So, another two-story episode.
Hmm.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. I'm guessing this is going on for two seasons worth.
As long as possible. As long as we can get.
Yeah. Then we've got My Hero Academia. It is, once I find my button, there we go. Sun Eater of the Big Three, episode 71. Which is all about Sun Eater, pretty much.
Yeah. Some initial, hustle and bustle with the Hasaikai as everybody's busting into the mansion to find a hidden door. Night Eye, he remembers in the flashback, you gotta hit the panels under the vase in a certain order to open the passageway and they get down to the basement where everybody's, all the gang is holed up in.
So even some guys jumping out of there, but they're aware of it and they say as much as, like, clearly they're just trying to delay us as much as possible.
Yeah, just sent all their boys out, hey, what's this all about? A warrant, we got a warrant to search your premises. What's a premises? We got no Latino premises around here, huh? You're just super capitalist. What's a miter?
Yeah.
Is Bubble Girl's power just blowing bubbles?
That would be fucking amazing, man, because she's like, sun's in my eyes is basically what happens. And I'm like, that would suck, but if that's all she can do, that's fucking class.
It's like, well, remember, like, it doesn't matter what quirk you got, it's how you apply it.
Like what if she Muriel's,
quirk could be, like, quite a handicap. We've got kinds of just kind of fall intrusive, but with the right application, you can do amazing things with it.
As Joseph Joestar said, I wish I had a cool thing like bubbles. You know, it's how you use them, man.
Yeah, her quirk is bubble. Unsurprisingly. the bubble allows her to make bubbles filled with an aroma that she has smelled at least once before.
Oh, it's weird, like, raw sewage. Yeah. It's like bubbles of that popping all over you. Oh.
She can make sweet smelling bubbles and foul smelling ones. When she is too nervous, she produces a very unpleasant smelling bubble that self destructs.
Weaponized farts. Okay, cool.
Seems to be the thing there.
What have you got, like maybe she's smelling a lot of deadly poisonous gases. They're not enough to kill her, but it's enough to get the smell of it, and then she's like, bubbles of cyanide gas.
she's hangs back to arrest the first guys. They attack, then they run down the corridor. They hit a brick wall, which wasn't in Night Eye's memories. So Mirio goes through. Meanwhile, Mimic shoots himself up with the superpowered steroids, and we learn that his power is it allows him to take over an object, but because he's boosted himself, he's now taken over the concrete in the secret corridor, and he starts bending the corridor round and about.
That's a pretty cool effect, yeah. I like the way that they specify, it's like, his powers should be that he could only possess nothing bigger than a fridge. I was like, why a fridge? Is that like the biggest thing anyone's seen him take over?
Well, about, you know, it's a lot of like the hero profile cards. Just, they don't really deal in a lot of like precise measurements. You know, he's about as strong as three gorillas.
So then Mimic drops everybody but Mirio through into a sub basement.
Yeah, you can't really stop Mario, so Mario's
and gonna power through. Three more guys are there ready to fight them.
And anyone immediately, oh guys, put your guns away. That dude with the sword, he can just nick him.
Your fellow did in Rubicon as well. The other guy who's banned from the shop.
Oh yeah. Just nick anything. What's his Stone Eater kind of gets a drop on him, and then just makes octopus hands and then binds him up while the rest of
the head
basically
saying, they're clearly
down
here to slow us down, so I'll take care of these three dudes, you go on ahead. And, you know, Fat Gum's like, you sure? And he's like, yep. Okay everyone leave. Everyone's like, you want to leave the kid there to take care of it? And he's like, he's actually the strongest one out of all of us. He just has self-esteem issues, but he said he could take care of this, so I trust him.
He's got to believe in himself. He's got to walk his own path.
If the kind of guy who is such low self-esteem, that I think that's his one failing, says he can do this, then he can fucking do it. And I trust him 100%.
And we see throughout the episode flashbacks to him and Mirio's previous relationship before they came to the school.
Yeah, they were like in middle school together, weren't they?
Yeah.
Mm.
And, yeah.
In primary school.
He
like
saw him.
Yeah,
as,
yeah, you're right. You're
he
right
saw him as the son, and, but Mira's like, no, but I'm only able to persevere because he was also a disaster with his powers. Because
he sees this guy who's so fucking nervous still fucking step up and put himself out there. And it's just like, that's impressive, dude, because you have this huge self-esteem issue, but you still put yourself out there. That's fucking class.
So that's why
you're
he
bigger
called
than
him,
me.
He gave him the name Sun Eater. Because he's more powerful than the sun.
Also, he has eating powers.
Yes. And so, he has to fight these three guys after their powers come back. Razorhead had knocked one of them out as well, but he also...
Specifically, he's like, that's the most dangerous one in this situation. Smack his fucking head into the ground. Looks like he broke his fucking neck.
Yeah, it didn't fall very well there.
No.
Maybe like, you know, they all have a lot of combo characters have just like the mutant healing factor just in the background there.
Yeah, a little bit of that going, sure.
So these are three guys who society has let down, and
they give you their three different backgrounds.
Yes. And and then they found a place. They were offered a place, and they had no reason to live, and so Hasekai has given them a reason to exist by serving Overhaul. And,
but these aren't dudes who are going to back down. They're not the guys who've been bought off or guys who have been threatened to do this. They're in it.
They believe what they're doing. Yeah.
They believe in it.
Yeah, because they were operating, some of the heroes were kind of mistakenly thinking that some of these people are working out of fear, but actually they're working out of loyalty.
Which is more dangerous.
Yeah. And, but that plays into an underlying theme in the series of, like, yeah, the this superhuman society isn't serving everybody.
Yeah.
And because it's not, other people are taking advantage of that. But these guys are going to have to get beaten up. But one of them, the one who was knocked out's powers are very useful for dealing with Sun Eater, unfortunately. His power is food, which allows him to eat anything.
Yeah, Sun Eater's doing fucking great against the two guys because, you know, tentacles are great. He can make big old crab claws to destroy your man's weapons. He can make himself like an oyster shell or a crab shell carapace so that hardening guy can't really do any damage to him.
Yeah, as well, he's just like really pushing his limits as well and just combining multiple elements into one form. So he's got, let's say, a hand that has like all the muscles of like an octopus tentacle, but covered in the shell of a lobster or something like that. So
that's so fucking cool. I didn't even know I could do that. I was just like, ooh, that makes great combinations. And I didn't think, no, I'm literally going to blend this shit together.
Yes, he's a guy with super fine control over his powers. What does he call it? Kraken Chimera?
Yeah,
because he's combining all the seafood, I think.
But yeah, they managed to like chomp enough of it away that then he could steal the armor protecting him.
Because the guy in the scarecrow mask, he basically has Matter Eater lad's power, right?
Yes.
Except he never gets full as well, which is another advantage of that.
He digests his food in 1 second. He doesn't even get to enjoy it. He never feels satisfied.
Yeah. Mm. And then the crystalline guy is like pounding on him, but then all of a sudden, Sunita produces his own crystals because he managed to eat a fragment of crystal he knocked off of him earlier in the fight.
Yeah, your man was exploding crystals everywhere, so. Yeah. Mm.
And, he manages to, take them all out by, using their own power against them.
But it's not only that, like, he was reading the situation, because he saw how good they were working together as a team.
Yes, so he blinds, he blinds the guy who can steal things.
So you can't steal what you can't see, and while your man's coming at him to take another bite out of him, perhaps his actual fucking body this time, he puts, his crystalline friend in the way, and it's like, they're clearly more than, like, just guys who work well together.
They're also loyal to each other.
Yeah, so he can use that against them. Like, that's him reading the situation as well. It just shows him, like, he's got the powers, he's got the fucking skills, and he's got the observational skills. And the reactionary skills. It's just like, shit, this guy's good.
That's why he's one of the top three in the school. Mm-hmm. But he just needs to know that himself.
Yeah.
He hasn't quite internalized that. Everyone tells him he's on a top three in the school, and he clearly is, but he just hasn't internalized that as something that's a part of his character.
Yeah, but I guess this is a situation in which he says, I can handle this, and for everyone else, it's like, hopefully this will be a thing that will help him build on that.
Yeah. Those as well have not deployed the swordfish yet.
Yeah, where's the swordfish?
The other key thing is he tells the heroes that they've got to catch up with Mirio because... He won't be able. He'll push himself too far.
The reason why he's pushed himself, Sun Eater's pushed himself to do this, is because he can't let Mirio get in over his head.
We also will find out that Mirio is Bayonetta, in which I mean his clothes are made out of his hair.
Yes.
Oh yeah, that's so gross.
it's just so
the
like
goggles off because he can't bring the goggles through.
Things. Yes. Mm. With basic question, why would you go for that element of your costume if you gotta keep taking it off to use your powers?
I guess it's like a cool activation thing where he takes off the goggles are off kind of thing, because the gloves can't come off because they phase through things as well.
Next week it is episode all about Kirishima again, called Red Riot.
I'm just gonna punch some more guys. The first guy was doing a warm-up, and he's got to take on, there's two dudes at once.
Yeah.
Which Fatquam there as well, but.
I think we get the rest of his flashback as well. That we glimpsed previously. Like I said, he's the guy who probably really gets the most development in this arc. Which is good, because nobody else is going to get much development. Past this, beyond Deku, Shoto, and Bakugan.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah. As well, like, you know, that was nice, but Sonny here with Tamaki was, it was, well, I haven't really seen too much about him, so it was just kind of more so being introduced to him in a way by learning about his past and seeing him have a breakthrough against these villains.
Yeah. I mean, like, it solidly kind of covers his background, the problems he has to overcome personally and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. As well as makes him up, he's probably going to be just some more like a supporting character, really. So as long as this is all his whole deal is about. This is why he's.
Yeah, it covers everything you need to know.
So when you see him, you know what he's all about. It's like, yeah, that's him.
Yeah, I looked up because there's that article on Anime News Network about their top five female characters in My Hero Academia, and I looked up the last popularity poll, and there was only four female characters in the popularity poll.
In the top five?
Top 30.
Oh, sorry, okay.
Yeah, in the top 30, there was only four female characters, none in the top 10. But even Deku himself is only number 3. And the two people at 1 and 2 have got twice as many votes as he has.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
Which, when I saw that, I was like, that may explain why the last arc is the way it was.
So, top two are villains, aren't they?
No, they're not. They're Bakuga and Shoto.
Okay.
Yes. Well, they do love them boys.
But why? I mean, they don't do anything in the story, really. I mean, Shoto does more than Bakuga just gets angry.
They're hot boys? I mean, like, that's definitely a contributing factor, I would think.
One shouts, one broods.
People love that. What are you talking about?
That's true. But they don't do it much in the comic. But the rest of the top 30 is also weird, because it was from about this time last year.
Yeah.
And it's got loads of, like, the random kids from the other schools.
I really don't like when everyone do that, because it's like, where are they going to bring back this character who appeared for a one-off story arc in Chapter 12?
Actually, some of them are back at the end of this season of the anime, I think, but
it's like things like that. Yes. That's why as well the One Piece character bowl is driving me mad. What we're going to see is one guy from Shanks' crew, the guy you saw in the first chapter of the comic and never saw again. I don't know.
Well, at least we want
peace. How is he your favourite?
The scale of the voting on the One Piece polls means that generally the top 20 is
currently happening characters. Yeah.
Okay, next up we've got, because this episode abruptly ended after he beat the bad guys up. Vinland Saga, episode 21, Reunion. In which Ashkelad does some terrible planning that he's told to never do again.
It's a solid plan. He can't deny that.
It is a solid plan, but
it's kind of a super dick plan. Yeah.
In which they head up to York. We get the narrator explaining what York was like in 1014.
And even like Ashkelad and Canute talking about it. It's like, oh, the king's probably going to set it up as the new capital for his kingdom. Yeah.
Is that so, smirk?
And as it was panning, I was like, I've been there. I used to live there.
Really?
Didn't look like that when I lived there.
I was wondering, could you even recognize like the bend of the river or something? I thought you meant
the river. Yeah.
Well, that's gentrification for you. It changes the whole character of a place.
This used to be a nice Viking town.
Well,
then the rich people come in.
Bits of it still are. You can go to the Jorvik Museum and see what it used to look like.
Hmm.
And smell what it used to smell like.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
King's Wynn's throne room is now a Starbucks. This is a disgrace.
We learned also in the narration that this is the hub for slaves leaving England, because it explained that Vikings used to trade slaves around what they knew as the world. And this is why we see that Leif Erikson is here, because he's still searching. They're also saying they're like bemoaning the fact that they can't just buy all the slaves and release them.
They just got to do what little they can.
Further establishing that Leif Erikson is one of the good guys, possibly the goodest guy in the series.
Yeah, probably.
And yeah, there's an assassination attempt on Canute. It appears to be successful by somebody using a very strange weapon.
Some weird kind of stick bow.
It's like a bow, but it's sideways. How does that work?
But the assassin is then himself assassinated by Thorfinn.
Can you call it an assassination if you like land whole bodily on the dude and stab him up?
Because
I've done that in Assassin's Creed, but I don't think it counts as an assassination. I think that's a straight up murder.
Look, assassination is just fancy murder. It's just high level murder. He definitely assassinated that dude. He also murdered, de-lifed him, whatever you want to call it. Stabbed him up, but good.
Yeah, and the guards are like, they're examining the body of the prince, discovering that, oh my god, the prince was a woman all along.
I love those guards. I love the guard who's like questioning, Thorfinn, where he's kind of like, it's like, you look super suspicious. You're obviously one of the assassins. He's like, the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. I got a broken arm. How can I fire a fucking crossbow, you idiot?
Leif's there as well. He's suspected as well, but then Canute, the real Canute shows up. And, well, first of all, they recognize Thorfinn as being one of Canute's retinue.
Also, that's the guy who, firstly, you recognize him in the order of, that's the guy who beat Thorkill.
Yes.
And also he's in Canute's side, because it's like, well, if he beat Thorkill, that means he could kick my ass, so I'm not going to fucking fight him.
And, yeah, so that's all settled. Canute's mad that, well, first of all, he wants to make sure this woman, like, lives the last moments of her life. Or do everything you can to try and save her, because he's not happy that, Ascalad had
a double
set up for him.
I don't think, is he even the one who asked why was there a woman double?
Well,
because it was the prettiest one we could get, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then we get the reunion of the title between Leif and Thorfinn, and it doesn't go particularly well because
it's a tearful one, but just one-sidedly tearful.
Because Thorfinn is filled with toxic revenge.
Yeah. He's fucking had a hard couple of years, and it's just, written it over his face, and Leif's going, well, what happened to that happy little kid running around Iceland. He's just this cold, hard, this man now is what he is. You know, he can't even be called a child. He's just this cold, hard little guy.
And even with that, he's still not giving up on him. I mean, like, he spent, what, 11 years doing this? He's not giving up on him.
Yeah.
And he says as much to him.
Yeah. And, Thorfinn explains that he's not going to do anything until he's killed Ascalad.
Yeah, but Thorfinn, like, your mother is not well. You should get home. You should see her for a few days. Fuck that. Nothing else matters but my revenge.
Then we got some more plotting and planning in public so they can get, Gunnar to feed information back to the king because they're pretty sure he's spying for the king.
Because he's super sketchy. so they straight up lay out
some errands.
So if Ascalad not only hired the body double, but he also hired the assassin.
Yes.
Because this would make it look like everyone in the town is now going like, hey, someone tried to kill the prince. And it's like, oh yeah, but I mean, like, of course you're going to try and kill the prince. And it's like, yeah, but the king lives here. Surely you try and kill the king, because, and I mean, like, even then he's like second in line for the throne. So you want to kill the king and then his brother and then him. But who would want to kill him then?
And he sends people out to wander around town in bars saying,
spreading rumors. I heard a rumor.
Yes. No, this is only
it's just a rumor.
Rumor.
It's not fucking, it's definitely not true.
Yes. But we should also mention that there are some great Flocky pissed off faces throughout and smug grins on Ascalad towards Flocky at points, because this is Flocky's own plan turned against him of using assassins. And, because it's like, well, you've hired assassins before, Flocky, i.e. me. And so therefore, it definitely would look like that you've hired the assassin again this time.
It seems exactly your MO because you specifically hired me to do this kind of thing.
Yes.
Just saying, bud.
So they think they've got the king on the ropes.
Because the king, their worry was they were going to meet him tomorrow, and the king's probably going to go, hey, Thorkil, I need you to go over there, and I'm going to have you hold these four different disparate places that aren't connected at all, and it's going to be really fucking hard to do, and you're probably going to get your ass kicked. But now he can't put him in a position of lower power, because it'll really look like the king is out to get his second youngest.
Oh, if you can send canoes away off to a battlefield, it seems like, Fabi's hoping he's going to die in a battlefield.
Like, if the London thing happened and he didn't get Thorkill, it would have looked like, did you send Canute to die in London? But now it looks like Canute went to London, got the guy who was fucking running the show on his side and is a badass warrior. You have to reward him properly. But if he sends him to another battlefield, it's like, yeah, he's definitely trying to kill him.
Yeah, and but before all that, before the meeting in the morning, Thorfinn wants to kill Ashgalad.
You owe me one.
So they're going to have a duel, and Canute's going to be the witness, and he does deliberately say, if I tell you both to stop, you've got to stop.
Yeah, this ends when I fucking say it, basically. Just because it's like, I need both of these motherfuckers, really.
Yeah. But first we have the undercard. where Ashgalad has to do a favor for his buddy Bjorn. He's going to send him off in style.
Well, if you want to go to Valhalla, you got to go fight him. And the thing with Bjorn the day before was like, oh, this is a really swanky room you got, Bjorn. It's like, yeah, fucking, I'd want to get it after saving your ass kind of thing. It's like, how's your leg? It's like, ah, I've got a few arrows, but I can fucking still swing a sword. And it's like, tomorrow then. And it's like, okay. I was just like, it went from friendly banter to, so, we fight to the death? Yes, obviously.
I was bored to it. See you then.
And, I like Bjorn as a character. I mean, like, he's obviously a fucking monster. Like a lot of characters in this show, to be fair. But
Ashley was his bud. At least that's what we looked at him for such a long time. Looked up to him for so long, and it really hurts when you said that he hated us all, but I couldn't help it. I still looked up to you, even though I know you hate me. And I know I hate me and everyone that from where I'm from as well. But yeah.
It never did that like directly in the story, but you'd always see like when Bjorn learns that Ashgalad is part Welsh, that he's kind of like, fucking, you never fucking told me this and I've been working with you for years kind of thing. He never said it, but you could see the look on his face where he's really annoyed that there's this huge part of the guy he respects so goddamn much that he knew nothing about.
He does make the point here of telling Ashgalad that, yes, you hated us, you hated me, and you hated yourself.
Yeah.
That's the thing. He's not so much, it feels like not so much that he wanted Ashgalad as a friend. He was worried as a friend that Ashgalad had no friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
That since Ashgalad didn't consider him a friend, that Ashgalad was, like, basically his question was, aren't you lonely? And he felt really bad for his friend, but not reciprocated friend from his point of view. Yeah. An odd situation.
Yeah. I can't remember if there's a flashback to come or whether they've cut a longer flashback out. I'll just wait and see over the next few episodes. I believe they stuck in an extra bit of flashback here from what people were saying on Twitter.
So
they have the duel, and I do like, the bit I like is, like, Ashgalad immediately worrying that he hasn't instantly killed.
Yeah, he's like, oh shit, sorry, I didn't hit your vitals, let me just finish you off there, but it gives him enough time to actually say something rather than think all his thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah, pained last words and his, yeah. Like, Bjorn, you're alright.
And, he admits to him that Bjorn was his friend. And then Bjorn passes. And then cuts to Thorfinn's glowering face.
Like, I love that fucking thing where it's just like, alright kid, I'll play with you now kind of thing. It's like, I've done the actual serious thing that fucking matters. You don't matter. This doesn't matter. Your fucking revenge means nothing. Like, you couldn't feel more like you're he's the B card. Even though, obviously, the first guy wasn't going to put up a fight, but the fight mattered.
Mm.
Whereas this is nothing. This is another fucking stepping stone.
The other thing for this episode, which drove home to me, is how, like, Ashgalad is now, like, a surrogate father to both Canute and Thorfinn.
Yeah, very much so.
He's the one who's turned them into the men that they've become
the monsters.
I also like seeing how it shows on Ash Lad's face how much time has passed, because you see there's a little glimpse of him.
When Leif
recalls him when they were attacked on the boat 10 or 11 years ago, he says, so he's fresh-faced, he's smoky, smarmy, but now he's looking, got a few more lines around the face, got a big gash in his forehead as well. He's been through a lot in the last decade.
It's nice to see those beside each other, just to show you how much the characters have aged, that kind of thing. I mean, like, you get the same with Leif, where Thorfinn kind of looks at him and is like, are you like, what happened to your hair, man? Because you just kind of see the development of that. Some, like, in general, some solid faces in this episode. I particularly like Thorkell watching the fighting in the background, just with a big fucking grin on his head. He's just like, oh, I'm fucking down for this. This is great.
I think that was pretty much it. As we go into the next duel, next episode. I'm getting, because I know where the story is going, I'm getting hyped now as we get towards the end, because the end's a doozy.
Are we talking like on a kind of level similar to, oh my god, I've forgotten the name of the fucking show now. Bunch of guys looking for gold, like Japan
like
cowboy.
Golden Kamuy?
Yeah, it, like that fucking crazy fucking fight thing.
This is more, people are going to be, people are going to be angry about it. I can see people be, like, being angry about it, because this may, the story may be also to not be what they signed up for.
I wonder if they'll show like the immediate bit of the next arc at the end of this, just to not surprise people as they go into them.
Yeah, I guess they could softball it a little since they know where it's going.
I feel they might do actually, but, we'll wait and see. It's weirdly, it's not like Berserk in terms of what actually happens, but it's like Berserk in terms of the rhythm of the storytelling. This bit is the golden age part of the story, and then the next bit is like the next bit of Berserk, when all of a sudden you've got a whole bunch of characters who weren't in the first part, but who are now much more important than anybody we've met here, apart from Canute and Leif. That's about it. But, I was like, oh, this is like Berserk, except not, because it's set in the real world. Also, I'm always amused by people on Twitter going, I think Canute's going to do this. I think Canute's going to do that.
It's like, if you want to check the history book,
you just read a Wikipedia page.
Ew, jinx.
dear. Like, yeah, it's one thing that's like, oh, I've read the book or the manga or whatever beforehand, but it's like fucking history though.
because it's only Thorfinn is based on a person, but I think the timeline doesn't match.
Yeah, sure.
But I think everybody else is pretty much doing what we know of them doing in history.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're probably exaggerating things, but we can't say for sure whether Thorkell at all actually uppercutted a horse. those records are lost to the ages, you know.
But we do know he was working for the English and they switched sides and all that stuff. That is all documented. Righty-ho, then let's get into the Toei stuff. I shall begin with Rhea Solger, episode 37, Birth, the Most Fearsome Tag Team. Quick summary of this, because this doesn't move the plot on all that much. So essentially, it's a lesson for various people. It's for helicopter moms. If your kid wants to go out and play with the local dinosaur, you should let him go out and play with the local dinosaur.
Oh, that's just good advice, yeah.
If you're the leader of a Super Sentai team, you should trust your dinosaur a lot more and don't think he was eating a child. Even if that child's mum says that. Also, if you insulted a Super Sentai team as a mum, calling them a bunch of delinquents, you should apologise at the end. And if apologies are not forthcoming, then as a Super Sentai team, demand your apology. Also, yes, they do. I think it was practical effects of the of Ko riding on the back of the dinosaur because they were moving very slowly. But...
okay, safely, slowly. Yeah,
yeah. I think they got. I think he was on wires because it would have just be too painful. I think for the person in the dinosaur suit to have a full grown man standing on their back. Mm. But yeah, they were. He was like standing and kicking from the top of the dinosaur. There was some funny stuff with the Pterodon trying to follow, Tiramigo around to find out what he was up to. And Tiramigo in a sulk. It's just great. They've not, well, maybe they've used him the right amount, but he would have worn out his welcome if they used him more. But it's always good when there is a Tiramigo focused episode, because, hey, it's a tiny dinosaur wandering around town, interacting with real people. And, Kamen Rider 01, episode, not episode 1,
Episode 14.
14. We are the Space Brothers. So this starts with a great bit of meta storytelling. So in the series, whenever Kamen Rider 01 wants his bike, it gets fired out of the satellite to Earth. As like a giant cell phone, which then turns into a bike. Smartphone, which turns into a bike. Anyway, so he's late for work, so he summons it down from the space station. Gets into work, he thinks on time, but he's still a bit late. But then the Space Brothers of the title show up. And these are the two astronaut Huma Gears who maintain the space station. And part of their job is to recover the motorcycle every time it's summoned down from the satellite. And they have to take it back into space and put it back in the satellite.
I was going to ask, does it get shot back into space? It's like, no, two guys have to go get it. Okay, yes. That's great.
So, yeah, they come, one of them is like really rowdy. And clearly has already achieved singularity just by hell. Angry he gets all the time. And he's here to tell him off, Aruto off for summoning the motorcycle for frivolous purposes, because they're the ones who have to take it back into space each time. Then the cops turn up because they think there's a spy at Hedon for the terrorists, and they also look at the name. They're like, oh, two of them have got two of the parts of the name. And so maybe there's another two who represent death and thunder. And it turns out, like, one of these Space Brothers is called Raiden. And immediately, and he's always going, let's bring the thunder. And of course, Angry Cop is immediately suspicious of him. Turns out, as we go along the story, he was right. As they go to investigate, he's a survivor of the Daybreak City incident. And while he fights off the hacking attempt, it turns out that he was already been programmed by a Metsu Bajurin Rai net, and he was the spy all along and just didn't know it, and now his programming's reversed, and he becomes the new Kamen Rider of the bad guys. And they steal all of the progress keys off the good guys. They put it in his belt, which then allows them to steal power from the good guy satellite and power up the Ark satellite, which is in the bottom of the lake in Daybreak. And that allows the terrorists to activate their own progress key builder. They've got their own 3D printer. They just didn't have any power up till now. And they make a new progress key. Luckily, the satellite suspected this and had printed out a new weapon for 01 to use. Which is it's like Progress Buster, I think. It's like an Active Buster or something. It's named after whatever the bad guy Kamen Riders say when they transform. And that basically knocks all the progress keys out of the belt, and they're able to get all but two of them back again. Meanwhile, the bad guys have got their own new progress key, and they're about to use it, but he gets hit by the blaster as well. It goes flying. Angry Cop picks it up and goes, hey, you've got a new progress key. It's got a wolf on it. Well, that's mine. I use the wolf progress keys. And they're like, hey, you can't use that. It's one of our progress keys. And he goes, I'm so mad, I'm going to use it. And again, rips it open, shoves it in his belt. And he gets this assault wolf, I think it's called. But this one, rather than beaming down from the Zia satellite, as 01 uses, or wherever the cops are getting theirs from, we don't know yet, It gets beamed from the Ark satellite at the bottom of the lake. And he kicks the asses and kills, the new Kamen Rider from the bad guys. But then, after he's done that, he turns back to human and starts coughing up blood. Yeah, it's pretty nasty. It's like, for normally, it's like just get like weird red scuff marks on people. But no, he was actually, red liquid came out of his mouth and hit the ground. And, yeah, that's kind of, he's left with Jin, the one who behaves like a 5-year-old, getting mad because his new big brother had been killed. And, the other one's like, this just means you're gay. He goes, what's this weird feeling I'm feeling? He says, you're approaching the singularity. You're getting angry. It means you're, becoming more than a robot. And, looks like next week, the cops are going to attack the base of the terrorists, and it doesn't look good for a bunch of the characters. The head of the other corporation who funds the cops, he seems to be up to no good in this episode as well. He's behaving deeply suspicious because he's also talking about the Ark. It's like, if we follow the Ark, we'll create our own mythology. And Valkyrie's like, what mythology? The mythology of the Kamen Rider. That's definitely villain talk. So we'll see when he's going to finally turn into his Kamen Rider. I wonder if he was going to be the Death who's missing out of the, combination of, characters which make up the, bad guy's name. We shall see. Definitely looks like people are dying next week though. A week early for Christmas.
Oh man. So Christmas episode has been an extended period of mourning as they people just like stare out of windows when it's raining.
But what if you got the figure who died that Christmas?
Yeah, I know. Well, I will say this episode, the guy's playing, the angry cop, he was doing some pretty good acting of him completely beginning to lose it, particularly after he's injured and, hadn't realized he's also a YouTuber, but, the actor, not the character.
Where do you find a time in the middle of the police studio?
Where does he find time to play Death Stranding? But apparently he does.
Long stakeout.
Yeah. What's going on in Precure?
Well, in Precure, I'm up to date, not now, and up to date with, again, another little arc was between Elena and Tenjo and questioning and interrogating Elena's sunny outlook on life and why she's always happy mom making people smile. Kind of two episodes that were just interrelated, but wasn't like a two-part saga thing, but was one where essentially Elena's mom got her heart got stolen and she got turned into a giant monster thing. And while they're fighting out the monster, Elena's mom inside, consumed by her sadness, going, oh, but Lena, that smile you put on isn't your real smile. You're putting up like a happy front to try and be strong for people when you're feeling sad inside yourself. And now Lena's feeling really down about that. But they have got a bead on at the space police, the galaxy police, have a bead on where the bad guy's base might be. They're bombing, that into the planet where Tenjo was from. And it's a very high-tech planet, very futuristic. It's all populated by people who look kind of like her. They got their kind of standard Tengu face with a red skin and a really, really long nose. And they're very scientifically advanced. They find a lot of great inventions in the universe. But they're all very smug and arrogant about it. So they're smiling at you, but they're being very condescending. And Tenjo, who is from here, boy, is excellent with his face. He hates this place. Mostly because they're very smug and condescending there, but also because she hasn't got a long nose. She's got a normal nose, and she was wearing like a long nose mask just to try and blend in. But he was ridiculed and mocked for having a tiny little nose like that. You'll never get anywhere in the world with a tiny nose. You're a freak. You don't belong here. So that's why she is as well. She's those kind of fake smiles, they just grieve her so, because this reminds her of the treatment she received in here. And she's just like fighting the Precures one on one, not doing a usual thing of leading from behind and sending wave after wave of goons after him. She just takes it to him herself, turns herself into a giant monster person and fights him off. And is having this like digs at Elena as well and just like trying to get to her. And Leia's sort of has her breakthrough, which gets like the hidden power of trying to find again. But she smiles because, well, when I was a kid and I was going to school, getting back to that again, you know, I felt different. You know, my dad's from Mexico, my mom is from Japan, and I feel like, you know, was kind of from here. Do I belong here? But I do belong here because even though I was feeling bad, I came home with my family and the seeing their smiles made me feel better. So I wanted to be happy and outgoing as well, because I didn't want anybody else to feel that way. But I understand that, well, maybe it'll take more than that to try and help ease somebody's sadness and grief. So I just want to understand you, dude. Let's stop this fighting. And then it doesn't really quite come off this day. That defeats her, but the cat gets away. And that's about like two thirds of the way through. They had a confrontation. The real thing is when, after all the fighting has been said and done, and is at home with her mom then, and they're just like, just started cooking then, and you know, it's helping her mom. She's been a good kid like that. And just in the middle of just like helping her out, and I guess she's still feeling a bit, torn up, a bit raw from what's happened the last couple of days. And she just starts crying, and it's like, well, what's wrong, dear? Everyone's saying, man, I'm trying to be like happy and outgoing to people again, because I think, I like to think that like happiness and smiles are kind of contagious, you know, just by seeing somebody else, despite what's for you being happy towards them, you know, maybe you might like able to brighten their day a little bit. But what I'm doing is just making them feel worse and just like compounding, you know, I'm coming across as, disingenuous or insincere. And as well, like, what do I do when I just like, I can't get through somebody like that? And she's just feeling really just torn about it. Fun, kid, you take a lot onto yourself. You try and like pull up that strong outlook because, you know, of smiling all the time because you're the big sister for your brothers and sisters here. You're really helping around the shop and helping around the house and you're great at school, but it's okay just to ease off sometimes. You're taking too much onto yourself, and it's okay to feel sad as well. You don't need to be happy all the time. If you need to let it out, just let it out. And it's just a nice little moment. And the brothers and sisters come in. Hey, is dinner ready yet? Not now, kids. You stop. It's like, oh, but they're good kids if they can see that. And there's not a nice moment happening here. Well, I guess like the next eldest was saying, well, I guess I can come in. Oh, whatever. You're just like, trying to get brownie points now. Yeah, well, my sauce is better than your anyway, sis, and all the little toddlers. We have set the table, and it's just a nice little family moment. And it's a good little message there as well. So it's like, yeah, like, you don't need to, be kind of fake, like a fake, like a pleasant facade for the benefit of others. If you're feeling down about it, then be honest, and people will hope you sympathize with you and make you feel better. That's another way to try and be supportive of somebody. You know, you don't have to be this happy all the time. You can just be like a shoulder to cry on, or hopefully someone be the shoulder that you can cry on. You know, it's okay. Let yourself be sad. Next week, the Christmas episode, we're going around delivering presents, and also the main villain, Serpentor himself, Lord Darkness, is going to show up and kick all our asses, I think.
Oh, geez, yep. All the bad stuff happens at Christmas, yeah.
Yep. A big green guy coming along is going to steal Christmas. Ever heard the like of that?
And finally, we've got Gay No Kids Row, episode 84, Chin-san, the Foreign Worker. This was the thing I'd only watched half of, but I've skimmed through the second half now while Niall was talking pretty clear, so I'm up to speed on at least what happens in this episode. So
this was the thing I was most worried about coming into this week. It's like, how are they going to handle this sympathetically? I hope.
Well, they do.
I initially thought his name was supposed to be like the foreign worker. We can't pronounce his name, but no, it's dick jokes.
It is dick jokes.
Dick jokes.
It is awesome about that as well.
That's true. Yeah.
It's like, you know, if my name is like, oh, is this, is like that a joke here. We have, it's kind of a joke. It's kind of a bad practice anyway, but like, if you hire a job, what's your name for? Oh, my name is like, Shang Buhan. Shang Buhan, that's too hard to say. You're Sean Buhan now. And they give you the name that they can pronounce or say.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be like a little nickname, but then it kind of just becomes your identity then. And they never quite embrace that. Oh, you're from out from foreign. No, you're Sean. You're Patrick now. It's like, no, my name is not that. Not calling me that.
That's way too common a practice, unfortunately.
Yeah.
This is a South Seas yokai who has come to Japan because his island is so poor and he hates to see the humans living in poverty. So he's going to go to Japan because they've got lots of money there. He can come and get a job.
Make some money, post at home, bish bash bosh. Good job.
He gets arrested when he beats up somebody who's insulting a ramen shop worker.
Well, he just spilled some water, like, it's just fucking water.
And, Kitaro comes to be his guarantor and we're into the problem of two problems. One, his name, and two, the fact that he's wandering around naked.
One, his name is some word for penis, and also his dick is swinging around.
Well,
so, I mean, like...
Let me inform you, Dwayne. Hmm? His dicks are swinging around.
See, that? Yeah, okay, that's worse. See, that makes... I'm not saying his name is bad. I'm just saying that just draws attention to them. Then, okay, I wasn't aware that multiple dicks were in the equation here.
Yeah, this is a super meta in that, yeah, it relies on you knowing, and obviously if you're in Japan, you will know that they're trying to say Chinpo.
Yeah.
And it's great, but it's meta in that clearly they're not allowed to say Chinpo. So they get around it by...
It's so fucking good.
Cutting away to things which sound like Po repeatedly. Yeah.
My favorite one was the pigeons. It's like, my name is Chin. Boo! Boo!
It was very Austin Powers.
Yeah, very much so.
But also, they clearly weren't allowed to do this in 2007 either, when his name was just Poe.
His name is Richard.
So yes, they switched it from where it was the previous time he showed up. Normally he shows up as part of Nurihion's yokai army, which is why I'm very worried about the thing at the end when he says he's found a new job in Japan.
No, that's the thing I was worried about as well. I was like, oh, what a happy ending. It's like, what was the new job again? Who are you working for?
Very far away.
Well, it couldn't be any worse than where he was working, in a warehouse.
Amazon warehouse, yeah.
Which illegally keeps its non-Japanese workers overnight for unpaid overtime.
I was like, I mean, it did remind that scene of not necessarily making the foreign workers work overtime, but just did remind me of like why I'm no longer in the food industry.
My partner wasn't watching it, but they looked up and kind of said, is this taking the piss out of Amazon and work practices? And I was like, yeah, but also systemic racism.
It's
doing a lot of things. Yeah, I did like the fact that the one company he signs up for is like, all these dudes have scars on their faces. This seems suspect. Is he working for the mob?
Yeah. I wonder is Amazon listed as a black company in Japan? Obviously not, because otherwise it wouldn't be allowed to operate as much as they do.
Yeah, when you have a lot of money to fucking throw around, who knows?
One of his co-workers, Paolo, is being worked to death, which is all that he can take, and he can't take no more. So he's going to break his promise to Mana that he'd wear clothes. And
she gave him like a scarf to cover himself. Cover
for the love of God. For the love of God. If you're any friend of mine, you will just stop getting naked at work. Okay. It's the least I can do.
They also don't want
to... I like it when everyone was scrolling through Twitter and it's like, naked man beats up 50 men in a factory. And I was like, what? What a crazy news article.
I like you went better with that. Nick and Musaver comes in with like the live photos from the scene. He has to like zoom in like 50 times. Oh yeah, that's definitely Chinpo. Naked red man running around warehouse beating guys up. Who could that be? If I zoom in the face, that could be any red guy running around naked.
Oh no, that's Chinpo. I recognize his haircut.
Oh, my absolute favorite bit of the episode is early on is when, Kitaro's dad is lecturing.
That's pretty good, Joe. Chinpo, you can't walk around Japan naked. It's against the law. And it's just like scroll down to his non-genitals.
Hands up and down his body.
Yeah. His genitals aren't showing. I can't arrest him. Yeah. Also, can you arrest an eyeball? I'm not sure of the legality of it.
Well, yeah, what jail could hold him?
That's a very thin bars, yeah.
Well, a jar, probably. I'm sure there's plenty of times he's been trapped in various things.
Just keep him inside the coffee filter, the coffee mug, coffee jug even.
An overturned bowl. Yeah, lots of things, I guess.
We'll float him in the water cooler.
Yeah, that was Kitaro. That was all the anime we watched this week.
I mean, like, when you were coming into this one kind of nervous, how do you feel it handled the social issues it wanted to talk about with dick jokes?
It was just his name means, yeah, it sounds a lot like dick, you know, like, that's just where he's from in his language, in his culture. He's just James. It's just, you're putting your, don't call it prejudice, but you're only seeing it from your own point of view. You're actually seeing him. This is a guy who has to fit in our society, so he can't be called Dick. He has to be called Jim. And it's like, why should he have to do that? And doesn't it give you license then to, impose upon him in other ways, like forcing him to work for little to no pay overnight for like a 20 hour shifts or whatever it is.
Yeah, I did appreciate that, like, the lesson, it's not like they resolve racism or anything at the end of the episode, but I do appreciate that he's like, I'm not gonna hate Japan and Japanese just because of this fucking dickhead, cause like, man is here, there's decent people as well, and I'm not gonna judge an entire race based off of the one dickhead I had to deal with, which is like, yeah, it's kind of coming from the opposite end, the foreigner learns not to be racist kind of thing, which is like, you kind of wish it was the other way around, but, it's not like I said, it's not like they can cure racism in a children's cartoon.
I can give it a good try, though.
Gotta try. Give it a lash, yeah. You gotta try.
Yeah, so the other thing is like how worn down by Japanese society Kitaro's been as well. His thing is gotta accept your lot or find a different job.
Yeah, because that's just the normal fucking way of thinking. And like, even Mana like is like, oh, work hard, giving him sweets and stuff. And he's like, well, Mana's fucking looking out for me. I can't quit my job, you know, because she's really proud of me for having gotten a job. And it's like, yeah, but you're in a shit job where they treat you shit, dude. You shouldn't have to fucking take that. But even he feels like obliged to because other people are just saying, work hard and do well, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, as well, like he's compared to where he's from, it's like, oh, there's very little food and there's not a lot of clean water there. And then I come here and you go into a place and they give you a glass of water for nothing. It's a great place, really. It's a shame that there's, you know, some people around who are going to exploit me. But according to the news, they closed that warehouse down. So that's something that only happened in a cartoon, but I'm happy it's transpired anyway.
That's the closest they could come to like a happy ending where he's got a new job, possibly being evil. And they shut that factory down off screen. Hooray.
Well, yeah, maybe Nurhion pulled some strings to shut it down, so.
I do you a favor, kid. All you gotta do is take out Kiddo.
I'm sure it definitely feels like he'll be back. But also because the entire thing feels at this point like everybody's going to be back at some point.
What was the triple rainbow thing? Is that like some sort of dick joke I wasn't getting? I was just like, what's the deal with the three rainbows? That seemed very specific. It's like, wow, he's flying away like Superman and there's three rainbows. I was like, wait, is that? Maybe it's a pun I'm just not getting or something. I don't know.
Maybe he has three dicks.
Well, we know that for sure. Past appearances, he has had three penises.
Okay, so it was three. Well, I said, okay, it's going to be two or more. So anywhere between three and five, I think, would...
Yes.
Like a five being an extra hand down there. Oh,
dear.
Yeah.
<that's
here.
laughs>
Okay. Well, yeah, thankfully, or unthankfully, they just played with the idea that you'd seen Kitaro before, that you may know, because he's not a traditional yokai.
I imagine he probably has a statue on that fucking road.
Yeah,
people know this motherfucker.
He's one Mizuki made up out of whole cloth.
Right, right, right.
So yeah, if anybody else writing about him kind of has to owe Mizuki a debt of gratitude.
Hey, I invented the multi-dicked guy. That's mine. I claim to fame.
Righty ho, we will be back next time for our last podcast before Christmas, possibly the last one of the year.
No, not so soon.
I'm more like, oh no, we have to end the episode in the new year full of 2 weeks worth of episodes.
Yep.
My Hero Academia, they all died. Dr. Stone, they made the atomic bomb and they all died. get through this real quick.
Okay, right, well, goodbye. Everybody read Vigilantes, you kind of have to there. Right.
Oh yeah.
To the point, they're going to have to animate it as well.
Hmm.
But now it's like, oh, this is actually important in the main comic now. We need to have this.
Right, right.
Yeah, so all those people who say, oh, I love reading My Hero Academia more than I love reading American superheroes, because you only have to read one comic. Well, got some bad news for you after this week's chapter.
Dear.
Rightio, we'll be back next week with more of the same. Goodbye.
Bye.
Yeah.